It's Tony Mack and the Triplett with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown, Auburn!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Welcome in, everybody. Tony Mack and the Triplett. That's right. Getting you ready for a wonderful Saturday morning. Not really the best matchup, but you can at least thank the good Lord alive that it's not next week yet. Because I don't know if you've looked at the schedule for next week, Aaron, but it's not great.
Well, it's not great this week, but we'll thank do with what we can. Got one really good game that's going to be today, Clemson and Louisville rematch in what was probably the best regular season game last year, most entertaining game for sure. Death Valley. This time, Clemson travels to Louisville to take on reigning Heisman Trophy winner Lamar Jackson, who people say is better than he was last year, and. I'm going to disagree. I'm going to say he's very similar. Maybe better as a passer, but because, I mean, this time last year through 2 weeks, he'd accounted for 13 total touchdowns. This year, only 8. So, but going to be an interesting matchup for sure. Probably the best defensive front, or he's got the best defensive front in college football, in my opinion, coming to his backyard. So it's going to be an entertaining matchup for sure.
Yeah, I know the touchdowns don't compare to last year, but I don't know his yardage up to this point last year. But he's already thrown for 771 yards.
Oh, he's been fantastic. There's no doubt about
it. He's rushed for another 239. So we are seeing Lamar Jackson. But the hardest part about that, when you're trying to win a back-to-back Heisman, which let's go ahead and admit right now, he will be a finalist. There's no doubt about that. Unless he absolutely just craps the bed.
Hurt or one of those things, he'll be there.
Absolutely. But the problem is you got other guys that haven't won it, like Baker Mayfield that had a really impressive road game yesterday or last week. You have guys like that aren't going up against themselves from last year. Lamar Jackson has to go up against those guys, but he's also competing against himself last year. So if the stats are close between him and Mayfield might have more touchdowns or Sam Darnold or what have you, they might lean towards them because Lamar's stats might not match up to what they did a year ago. So that's going to hurt him, but he'll definitely, 100%, he'll be in New York.
And we've already, my brother and I talked about this past week. We were talking about Lamar Jackson and how, Louisville, what are they ranked right now? 10 to 15. I can't exactly remember where they fell in the in this week's latest poll. But we personally don't want to see Lamar Jackson win the Heisman Trophy again, simply because we don't feel Louisville's going to be there at the end of the season. We don't feel like they're going to be one of the playoff teams in the Final Four or anything like that. So we don't want to see Lamar Jackson win another Heisman Trophy off pure stats, just pure numbers.
Well,
that's my least favorite kind. I mean, people are like, well, the Heisman is it's an individual award. But the Heisman Trophy is an individual award in the biggest team-oriented sport in the world. There's no other sport like football that relies on team as much. And so it's really a team award. And I think that and of course, last year, I think, yeah, if they give the Heisman Trophy at the end of the season, it goes to Deshaun Watson, hands down. And I think they should start doing that. Give the Heisman Trophy to after the national championship game, after the season's over, because I think that would have changed over history would be changed because I think Vince Young would have won the Heisman, and I think that Deshaun Watson would have won the Heisman last year. But that's just my opinion. I would like to see if Oklahoma keeps winning. I would love to see Mayfield win it if they keep winning and are in the playoffs at the end. I just want to see something different. I don't want to see Jackson winning off just numbers again.
Now, I agree to some point that it's not as fun, but I don't mind it. And I mentioned the other day when I was covering a segment for Tom that Heisman moments are the best when they coincide with a meaningful team victory as well. I get that. Like when your Heisman moment that you make at the end of the season is also the moment that either seals your division or seals your spot in the playoff or the national championship. You can't beat those moments. But at the same time, going back to last year, sure. I would have loved to have seen Deshaun Watson win it, mainly selfishly for a career thing, because I thought 2 years in a row he had done something spectacular. But Lamar Jackson last year and so far this year, you mentioned it's a team award for an individual because your team kind of helps you propel that individual there because you've got a good team around you. That might not be the case with Lamar Jackson, because last year, easily one of the worst offensive lines in the country, and he put up ridiculous video game-like numbers. You can't even say video game-like numbers, because I don't think you put up game numbers like that in video games. He had over 5,200 yards last year, I think, like 52 touchdowns, despite having one of the worst offensive lines in the country, and he's doing that again this year. And he had chances to – they were in all those big games. They did sputter at the end of the season, but with that awful offensive line, he was one pass away from beating the now defending national champions. And it was an awareness problem for a receiver. So with Lamar Jackson doing what he's doing despite not having a great team specifically on the offense around him, if he puts up numbers like that again, I wouldn't mind. And that's coming from a guy whose quarterback for his favorite team is probably going to be in New York as well.
And I guess it's just a matter of preference, I guess, at this point, because you want to see someone different winning again, someone deserving who wins a big game in a big moment leading into a national stage. But, I mean, I'm looking up this is some retro stuff, but Paul Hornung won the Heisman Trophy back in 1956. And I think Notre Dame had, like, a losing record when he won the Heisman Trophy way back when. And, of course, you had RG3, who won the Heisman, and I really think, and RG3, that season he had at Baylor when he won the Heisman was a fantastic season. I'm not taking anything away from him, but that 2011 season was kind of a season where there was nobody else to give it to as well. Not taking anything away from him. And then you had years where when Mark Ingram won the Heisman, him and Toby Gerhardt, very similar years, but Ingram had a better team effort. So that's one thing when team came into play, I think. So I think it goes either way, and I just think it depends on, you know, what's in the voter's mind at that point.
See, that's something else I don't like. You mentioned that Mark Ingram and Toby Gerhardt were very, very similar in what they did, but Mark Ingram had a better team. So what happens if you put Toby Gerhardt on that better team? Is he better than Mark Ingram? I thought he was he had the better season that year. Statistically better on a worse team. On a worse team. If he's on that better team, he probably has even better stats than Mark Ingram. I thought he deserved it that year.
And I thought he was equally as deserving as well, but I think that when you look at it like that, you can't, as a voter for the award, you can't just sit there and say, well, what if Dick Gerhardt had played for Alabama and Ingram had played for Stanford? I don't think that you can really say that. I think you can just look at what's been given to you and what you've seen yourself.
And what you've seen is a guy who's not as fortunate as Mark Ingram to have all the weapons he has around him and all the talent around him and still put up numbers better than him. That's what you saw. That's why he deserved it.
And I'm not saying he wasn't deserving. I'm just saying that I guess people don't. I would say as a voter, they don't look at it that way. And, of course, I don't know what's in the minds of these sports writers and former winners who vote. Obviously, in the award, there's going to be some bias. I know that for a fact, Roger Staubach voted for Keenan Reynolds as his Heisman winner, for obvious reasons. And I don't – but, see, that happens. And obviously, Keenan Reynolds wasn't going to win it a couple years ago. Obviously not. But – I respect that vote from an alumni standpoint for that, but I remember Cam Newton said he voted a couple years ago for Deshaun Watson, not this year, but the year before. I'm sure he voted for. They're pretty. I think they're friends and have worked together before, so I think that he voted for him last year too. But I know for a fact he came out publicly said that he voted for him 2 years ago. So there's just a lot of things that I think vary, and of course, the sports writers, depending on what area you're from the country, you're going to vote for somebody from that area. You're not going to vote for somebody from the northern. Sports writers are going to vote for the northern guy. Southern ones are going to vote for the southern, whoever's there. So I think just a lot of things go into it. It's just a complicated process. But just from a personal fan standpoint, I wish that they would take it and vote for it at the end of the season after everything is done. I know that all the awards are given out before, but maybe move the award show to after the season is over, because Because sometimes somebody's best moment's going to come on that biggest stage. Like Vince Young, 450 total yards against Texas, 200 passing, 200 rushing. And
then you're making it more. Then you are making it more of a team award that way.
Because that's a full team effort. But that was one of the greatest individual performances I've ever seen.
I agree with that. But and he was fortunate enough because of the team he had around him to be on that big stage. But then you're taking Heisman's away from guys like RG3, who put up. They played Washington in a bowl game, and their defense couldn't stop me and you out there. They ended up winning the bowl game, putting up 60 some of the points. He had an amazing game, but. Then you're going to compare that game. Sure, he had better stats in this game than so-and-so in the national championship, but it was a national championship game. Then you're really making it about what the team did and where the team got you, and that's just not the award. I agree that it's a team sport, but that's not what the award is, and I can't get behind that.
Okay, well, I actually Googled the Heisman Trophy definition, and it's awarded annually to the most outstanding player in college football in the United States whose performance best exhibits the pursuit of excellence with integrity. Winners epitomize great ability combined with diligence, perseverance, and hard work. It is presented by the Heisman Trophy Trust in early December before postseason bowl games. Now, I was actually looking in that definition for the word regular season. If that had been in the definition, then I could agree with it more, and it would have not really a problem with it, but they don't specify the regular season there.
But they specify that
it is given in December before bowl games.
Right, so that's regular season.
Yeah, in theory, but that just says that's when it's presented. Like, it doesn't say. I guess if they would have added when for their performance during the regular season, then it's presented. I don't know. I guess I just have ever since Vince Young should have won the Heisman Trophy. I've had this beef with the Heisman given too early.
And I agree, Vince should have won the Heisman, but he should have won it. There was an argument that he should have won it before the national championship game.
There was, but the season Reggie Bush had a great season. But then you see on the biggest stage, Reggie Bush had that. I'm going to try to lateral the ball in the middle of the second quarter back to the. That's not a Heisman Trophy move. Yeah, that guy should have won the Heisman Trophy. He had won the trophy. I mean, yeah, he doesn't have it anymore, but he won that year. He was the guy that won it, and I'm not even going to get into that. He won the trophy. And in the biggest stage, he tries to lateral the ball in the national championship game to some guy who's not even a fullback, who's not even paying attention. That's a Heisman move to you? That's just my opinion. And I only have those two guys to argue with, because that doesn't happen hardly. You don't really see that. I mean, maybe last year with Deshaun and the championship game, but I don't know. That's a personal opinion, but you can't be in the minds of the voters of this award. But that's just what I think.
I understand, and there are parts of that I do.
It's for both sides. As you can see, they make perfect sense.
You make points that I really do like, but there are just some things in there that I just can't get behind. But it was a good opening debate. We can get into more of that later if we have time. We have a really busy show today. We're going to start by telling you how you guys can get involved on that. You can dial 866-485-9867 to get in. Call. Talk to me, talk to Aaron. You can talk to him about his shirt of the day, shirt of the week that we'll get into. You can talk to him about your stance on the Heisman Trophy. You can tweet him, which is the easiest way, at Tony Mac Triplett, at A Trip Tennis, or at Tony Mac UMP. I'll save you some trouble. If you just go to at Tony Mac Triplett on Twitter, both of mine and Aaron's individual Twitters are in the bio. You can click those. You can follow us if you'd like, or you can just tweet at us. And let us know what you think. And we're going to give you a lot of opinion, because we're going to get into Aaron's shirt of the week. We're going to get into the crying Jordan face of the week for Aaron and myself coming up in the next segment. And then we will talk about some of your SEC games of the week. And then we'll pick our big games. Now, a lot of our big games of the week this week have to do with the SEC, because there are some really intriguing. And it really doesn't have to do with the fact that it's a slow week everywhere else. It is a slow week everywhere else, but there are some matchups in the SEC you really just can't avoid.
Yeah, there are some intriguing. It may not be your highly sought after, highly ranked matchups, but some of the matchups we have in the SEC today are very interesting, and teams that you don't get to see play very often are going head to head, especially when you're looking at the one I got my eye on is Vanderbilt and Kansas State. You know, how often you get to see those teams play. I think it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun.
That's a game that we'll get into a lot, because it's going to be really interesting as far as who the pressure's on. Vanderbilt's 2-0, but it's early enough in the season to where all the pressure's on K-State, because K-State was a preseason Big 12 team that a lot of people liked to go. Some people like to go to the playoffs, but some people like them in Bill Snyder's perceived last season. They like them to go and make a run at the Big 12 championship game. So if they go into Vanderbilt and lose at the beginning of the season, sure, eyes will turn to Vanderbilt, but K-State and the Big 12 will take a big hit. And then on the other end, Vanderbilt's 2-0. If they win this game, eyes on Vanderbilt. If they lose this game, oh, it's just Vandy. You know, it's just Vandy. So there's no pressure on Vanderbilt. They should be really loose and confident coming into this one. But first, before we take a break, Aaron, why don't you go ahead and tell everyone that they voted. You guys can vote at Tony Mac Triplett every Friday on Aaron's Shirt of the Week. Give them the choices. Run them down. Tell them who voted. Tell them ultimately what Shirt of the Week won.
Well, this week I actually got the post up a little bit late. I didn't mean to be so late, just slipped my mind, but late last night, I posted the three choices for the team shirt of the week were Texas, Washington, and Kentucky, and the poll is technically still open because I forgot to put a time limit on it this morning, but it's closed in accordance to this show, and it was another tie. We had 7 votes this time, not as many as we have because I got the poll up late, but 7 votes this time, and it was another tie at the top between Texas and Kentucky. And of course, when there's a tie, I just pick the one that I want to wear. And a part of me kind of wanted to wear Texas, but I thought that I might save Texas maybe for the for the Red River rivalry. And
I'm going to create like a bunch of different Twitters that week just so I can go in and vote against every shirt that's not Texas. I'm going to vote for the Maryland shirt that week.
But I chose the Kentucky Wildcats as my team shirt of the week. You can check that out on our Twitter at Tony Mac Triplett. Big blue shirt. Little shout out to Big Blue Nation here today.
Yeah, so there you have it. This is the second time, and I don't have any influence on it.
Although it is this is the first time I think we had 3 consecutive shows where we had Pac-12 shirts. We had Arizona State, Stanford, Arizona State, and Colorado. 3 Pac-12 teams.
This is the third time or the second time now where there's been a tie in the poll. And you're deciding tiebreaker that you get to pick. I don't know. I don't even look at the poll after I vote. I wait till you get here so I can see what shirt won. And this is the second time after a tie that you picked the shirt I voted for. So fantastic job by me. You're welcome. I love the blue Kentucky shirt. I love the Kentucky's logo. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Aaron and I have your crying Jordan faces of the week. You don't want to miss that because they're always good. That's right here on Tony Mac and the Triplett, Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump. Welcome back. Tony Mac and the Triplett, Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump, bringing you guys a lot of fun here today up until kickoff. And, boys, is this one going to be fun? Because, Aaron, we're just going to jump into it really quick, okay? We're just going to go ahead and get right into this one. It's your crying Jordan face of the week.
I have such been looking forward to this crying Jordan face of the week.
Can I just say that knowing what the music sounds like, and also knowing what your crying Jordan face of the week
makes it that much funnier, because I'm sitting over here trying to contain my laughter at how funny this is. All right, my crying Jordan face of the week happened on Monday night during the Monday Night Football doubleheader. It was the second leg of it, which was Chargers-Broncos. Really good game. The announcing team was none other than Beth Mowins and Rex Ryan, which Beth Mowins, if you've ever heard her call a Big 12 or a Big 10 game at 11 o'clock noon, 11 o'clock to noon on ESPN 2, you know how boring it is. So she was calling this ESPN Monday Night Football doubleheader with Rex Ryan, and Rex is worse. But the absolute the crying Jordan face of the week for me goes to none other than the man himself, the legend, Sergio Dip. his sideline report on Monday night. He only had one sideline report. But, oh my gosh, if you miss this, please. I mean, are we going to play this for them?
Yeah, you ready?
Yes, we're going to play you the legend himself, Sergio Dipp, sideline report from Monday Night Football. Here it is.
From up close, just watching Coach Vance Joseph from here. You watch him now on the screen. This diversity in his background is helping him a lot tonight. Quarterback at Colorado, defensive back in the NFL, and here he is having the time of his life this night, making his head coaching debut.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I just tweeted it out. That's just pure gold, people. If you don't think that that's funny, then I weep for you.
On a full scale, I think ESPN's the real bad part about this. Their idea was, it was the first time in the history of the NFL that two black coaches had their coaching debut against each other, so they were going for diversity. They had that aspect of it. They had Sergio on the sideline, you know, obviously a Spanish reporter. They had Beth Mowins.
Beth Mowins, the first woman in 30 years or something.
Yeah, in a long time.
Long time to call an NFL game.
So I get what they were doing, but you at least got to put a good product out there, and they didn't do that at all.
And at least Beth Mowins, she's a professional. She's very professional. I might think she's very boring when she calls it a game, but she at least is professional. Rex Ryan, no business being there, and obviously Sergio Dipp. looking now on the screen, Coach Vance Joseph.
Coach Vance Joseph.
Having the time of his life.
The best tweet I saw about him to me was the one about saying that he sounds like he's being held ransom. Go back and listen to it, and it really does sound like he's being held ransom. But all right, I'm going to get to it. My crying Jordan face of the week. You listen to this and tell me you can't guess who it is.
Obviously, you've made a ton of changed the culture, everything. But obviously, we lost in the very end, kind of like last year, 7-8 losses.
What's the question?
Getting to it.
Get to the question.
How do you keep this from snowballing?
It's not going to snowball. Next question.
Well, what exactly will be different, I guess?
There's nothing different. I go to work every day, and I coach my football team.
Okay.
Is that good enough for you?
Yes, I was just asking about how it was different from last year's losing by one possession.
Okay.
Tonight was also like that. So
losing by one possession?
Yes.
No, it was 1 point. Thanks.
Thank you. Did you catch that there at the end? Losing by one possession? No. It was 1 point. Well, Brian Kelly, the hell do you call that? That's one possession. And number one, she had every right to ask that question because last year, I believe 7 of your 8 losses were by one possession, something you couldn't change. One touchdown against Georgia, another touchdown instead of field goals, seals that game for you. So, yeah, it was a valid question, and you had to be your normal douchebag of a self. And okay, fine. The reporter didn't ask it in the best way. She was stumbling all over herself. That I get. She did a great job at keeping him going because that's just gold right there. And it just wraps up who Brian Kelly is as a whole. He's an ass. He's an ass. He always has been. And if Notre Dame doesn't win, and I don't think they're going to, if they don't win 8 or 9 games, I think he should be gone. He should have been gone after this year, after calling out his players in the media and everything. But for some reason, he survived.
Yeah, I don't know how he survived that. Brian Kelly, he's not only a bad football coach, but he's a worse person. He's a worse person, and he's a bad coach, but he's a worse individual. And, I mean, that's just ridiculous. The reporter, you're right, had every right to ask those questions. And you know that the reporters sometimes don't ask the best questions. Sometimes they ask stupid questions, but it's their job. And she didn't even ask a question that was stupid. He was just mad because his team at home was 5 point, they were 6.5 point opening favorites over this Georgia team playing a backup quarterback. Yes, Fromm is talented, but it's a backup quarterback. In your backyard, you're 5 point, you were open at 6.5. You started the game at 5. And you only produced one touchdown against Georgia. With a backup quarterback. It's you are pathetic. Your team is pathetic, and you should have been gone last year, but good riddance this year. There's just no way he survives.
Let's make a rule, and I feel sorry for the quarterback I'm about to make this rule against, because he plays well. He's not bad. But if you have to start a quarterback with the name of Wimbush, that just screams mediocrity. That screams I'm mediocre. Your name is Brian Wimbush. Okay, and you're on the big Notre Dame stage, which I'm just poking fun. I don't mean to take too much away, because he's played pretty well. But unfortunately, you have to get made fun of because you have the worst coach in the country. Because last year, going back to last year, and his players for some reason defended him. I'm not sure why. I can't get behind why they defended him, but I will not. He called out his center after an NC State game. They were playing in a hurricane for having a bad snap, a few bad snaps in a hurricane, number one. But number two, he blames his center. When you and your offensive coordinator called four straight plays in the freaking shotgun, what do you expect? You expect him to control the weather too?
And then he got on Deshaun Kizer for not making enough plays, enough throws, because he was like 8 of 30. I'm like, it's a monsoon outside, and you're expecting him to, you know, complete a ton of passes down the field from a spread formation. You deserve to lose that game.
You deserved you, a lot.
Actually, you didn't just deserve. You asked. You're like, please, NC State, beat me. Yeah, what a joke. He is a joke. Like, I just don't even. words can't even describe Brian Kelly as a coach or a person. I didn't like him when he was hired several years ago. And it's just gotten worse. His persona is just everything, and he has driven Notre Dame even further. I mean, Charlie Weiss, at least Notre Dame went to a couple BCS games. I mean, yeah, Brian Kelly went to the one championship game, which was arguably – I mean, that was arguably the worst undefeated team of this century, of this new century. And he got put in his place on the biggest stage. But other than that, they've been the staple of mediocrity and disappointment in college football.
Yeah, you're right. He was supposed to go there and save that Notre Dame program, and it looked like he was going to at first with the undefeated season. Got absolutely embarrassed, proved in a big way he didn't deserve to be there, and it's been downhill since then. I mean, sure, he's had some okay wins. I mean, they did beat LSU in a bowl game, I think, a few years ago. When the SEC was at its peak, that was the first year of the playoff. I get that, but one moment like that doesn't make up for all the other ones.
Brian Kelly will leave Notre Dame in a worse state than it was when Charlie Weiss left Notre Dame. And think about that for a second, folks.
That's saying something. Jeez. That's a big statement.
It's a bold statement. Because I think that Weiss went 3-9 and 6-6 or 6-5 and 6-6 in his last 2 years there, when Jimmy Clausen was the quarterback. But you know, Brian Kelly's on the verge of going 4-8 and probably, you know, 5-7, 6-6 at the best with Notre Dame. So it's going to be, if not worse, the same. Not going to be any better, that's for sure.
All right, Aaron, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here because it's the Crying Jordan Face segment. A lot of negativity in this segment, a lot of poking fun. I love that. It's a lot of fun. But because I can already think of one, I'm going to go ahead and ask you as well. And if you can't come up with one, that's okay. What was the best win of the weekend? Not necessarily a win of a football game, but an individual or something. You can pick a football win if you want. But what was the biggest success story of this entire weekend? I've got a good one, and I know I'm putting you on the spot. But can you think of one?
Well,
I can go and give mine to give you time to think.
All right, go ahead. Yeah, what's yours?
I think the biggest success story. People are giving him a little bit of criticism, saying
it. I just want to know where you're going with this before I get started.
Well, people are giving him a little bit of criticism here and there, for kind of his style that he called this weekend. But I thought he was fantastic. I'm going with Tony Romo. Tony Romo was hands down a huge success story this weekend. He was the analyst for the CBS noon game with Tennessee and Oakland. And I remembered that he was calling that game about halfway through the first quarter, maybe the beginning of the second quarter. I'm like, I don't recognize this guy's voice all that much, but he's really, really good. And then it hit me, that's Tony freaking Romo. Number one, I know he's in his 30s, but he's got the voice of a prestige, like, 50 30-plus-year-old guy who's been doing this for a long time. He has the football smarts. A lot of people were giving him criticism for predicting plays and saying that that's not good analysis. It gets kind of boring after a while. But number one, he was being asked, you know, what do you see here, Tony? And number two, it was great. He was really entertaining. I did like a little bit of the predictions. If that continues all season long, I can see how that can get old. But I can see how that would be first-time jitters. He hasn't done this. This is the first time he's ever done it. But overall, I thought Tony Romo, he's already probably the best analyst, the color analyst in the NFL right now.
I would say he's the second. I don't know. I really like Chris Collinsworth. Chris Collinsworth is my favorite.
Chris is really good.
For the NFL. I think Troy Aikman is very good. But CBS, who I think lags behind Fox and NBC and the NFL as far as, you know, their presentation and just their quality. I mean, Jim Nantz is one of the best professionals out there. You cannot get more professional than Jim Nantz, with the exception of probably Al Michaels. But Jim Nantz, he does everything by the book. He's great. He's good at what he does. But sometimes he just doesn't bring that pure excitement to me that I liked that Joe Buck does and that Al does. But Jim being paired with Phil Simms for so long, Phil Simms, ugh. That's all I really, and I like Phil, and I have nothing against Phil Simms, but I just don't care for him as a color analysis. And he was also very critical. Like, I remember last year watching Titans Jags on a Thursday night, Blake Bortles dropped back, and Phil Simms, that was terrible. That was awful, talking about this throw. Tony Romo with Jim Nantz is going to be great for CBS, and I think it's going to be great as far as matching it up with Fox and NBC as far as, you know, getting a good atmosphere and, you know, just that excitement for the game. I think he did a fantastic job.
Yeah, and there was some criticism coming out before his first game saying, wow, Tony Romo hasn't even called a game yet, and he's already on the CBS's number one team. Well, we saw why Sunday.
Exactly. And you not only saw why, but, I mean, Phil Simms? Like, that's just what I said. Ugh. I like when I heard Phil Simms, like,
It was a treat, is what it was. Now, Aaron, later on we're going to get into our picks, and Tennessee, Florida's one of them. If that game wasn't already hard enough to pick, which to me, that I don't know how I'm going to go in this game. I've been back and forth in this game over and over again. If that's not already enough, you know, the Florida players are still suspended. And then you go look at injury-plagued Tennessee. Now, their safety, Todd Kelly Jr., out indefinitely. He had a knee injury that plagued him. I believe he had one that plagued him last year. And now, after playing in the first two games, he's out indefinitely. I'm not sure if it's season ending or not, but he won't play today in Gainesville. I just made this game that much harder to freaking pick. That much harder. And I don't want to start throwing out. I can vomit Florida Tennessee stuff right now because I want to get into this game so much, but we got to save it. But this game is becoming harder and harder to pick, and the worst part isn't because of how good of a matchup it is. It's find confidence in the team that sucks the least, and that right now, that's the hardest part, is finding out who sucks the least, because they both suck pretty bad right now. You got a team who can't tackle against a team who can't move the football. So, Dad, before we get in, don't give away your pick, but do you know which way you're going in this one?
I do know which way that I'm going.
Gosh. How do you know?
It was, well, for one, so every year, my family, for years, it's just my immediate family, my grandparents on my mom's side, my aunt and uncle on my mom's side, and now I think one of my mom's cousins has joined in, and my wife has played for the last 3 years as well. So we always have these season picks. You pick about 10 games a week, and almost all of it's SEC sprinkled in. My granddad makes them out. And there's a few games every week that are, we call, my granddad, his first name is Don, and we call them Don games because, like, they're just random. They're like Akron and Ohio or Ball State and Army. He was in the military when he was younger, and so he loves putting the academies on the picks. But most of it's SEC. And and that one was one of the games this week, and so I've already made my. I had to make my pick. I made them. I think yesterday was when I made them. So I already had it know who I'm going to pick. So I've already got mine. And believe me, my confidence level is about 5 out of 100.
Yeah.
Not 5 out of 10, 5 out of 100. but I have made my pick.
Okay, well, I can't imagine how hard that was to decide, because I'm
extremely difficult.
I know who I'm picking on every other game on our picks except for that one. All right, when we come back, we're going to set you up for the second hour of Tony Mac and the Triplet, and we're going to give you, before we get into our picks, a couple good games to watch. Honorable mentions, if you will. A couple of games that are intriguing, but don't really necessarily have the big game hype to them. So when we come back, we'll give you those right here on Tony Mac and the Triplet, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump.
WUMP Sports Radio, The Op.
Welcome back, Tony Mac and the Triplet, getting you ready for college football. We are just an hour and 15 minutes away from kickoff. Got some pretty good games spread out throughout the day. Not necessarily the big ranked matchups we had last week all crammed into the 6:30 and 7:30 hours, but we've got some really intriguing matchups spread throughout the day. Now, some of those matchups didn't make our list of big games of the week, but we don't want to let them go by. So we're going to give you each an honorable mention, if you will, kind of game to keep an eye on if you have a chance. If one game gets out of hand, it's boring, or you just don't want to watch it, go watch one of these games. The first one I'm going to throw out there is Ole Miss at Cal. Ole Miss is a 3.5-point favorite on the road. Cal getting 3.5 at home. This plays perfectly. This game plays perfectly into Cal and Ole Miss's offense. This is going to be a shootout, barn burner, whatever you want to call it, because if there's one thing, that is Cal's 2-0, so is Ole Miss. They beat North Carolina 35-30 to start the season and then beat Weber State 33-20. They can score some points. They give up some points. Ole Miss, same way. They're not going to have much defense. Ole Miss doesn't even really run the football. So you're going to see Shea Patterson get loose. He's 60 of 78 on the season. That's almost 77% of his passes completed. 9 touchdowns, 1 interception, 918 yards passing already. Running game, I don't even think has 150 yards total. They might. It's close. Their leading rusher is Jordan Wilkins with 17 carries and 65 yards. Now, on the other end, Cal's going to try to, I really wouldn't say pound the ball. They've got one guy who's ran 22 times, but they have Patrick Laird, who's a senior, has ran 15 times for 200 yards. 15 times, and he's caught 3 balls out of the backfield, so they're going to get him involved a lot. Ross Bowers, their quarterback, throwing 67%, 563 yards, 4 touchdowns, 2 picks. Could be a good lift for the Ole Miss defense, but if you want to see some points scored, back and forth game coming down to the last possession, then you should probably tune into this one. Ole Miss at Cal later today. Ole Miss, the 3.5-point favorite on the road. Aaron, you got another one?
Yeah, got one. It's UCLA going on the road to play Memphis. And this game is interesting because this is an 11 o'clock kick, and it's a 9 a.m. kick for the UCLA players that are on Pacific time. So it's a 9 a.m. kick. So keep an eye on how that affects these players. But just some simple numbers in this game. UCLA is ranked 25th, but they're coming in as only 2.5-point favorites on Memphis. So it's going to be an interesting game. The over-under sitting at 72.5, so there's going to be some points put up in this game. Listen to the points per game average of these two teams. UCLA is averaging 50.5 points per game, almost 51 points a game, while Memphis is averaging 37. I believe Memphis has only played one game, so they scored 37 points in their opener. They allowed 29, though, and UCLA is allowing 33.5 points per game. So these points are going to be put up in this game. But total yards, UCLA 529. Memphis had 416 in their opener, but only 97 of those were passing. Memphis likes to run the ball. They had 319 yards on the ground in their opener. Darrell Henderson ran for 169 yards and a couple touchdowns on just 12 touches for the Tigers in their opener. And UCLA, of course, gave up 331 rushing yards to Texas A&M, or 331 rushing yards per game, and a bunch in the opener to Texas A&M. Travion Williams went over 200, and then they had another guy go over 100 yards as well. So the matchup to keep an eye on is how Memphis runs the football at home, catching these UCLA players on an early early day for them at 9 a.m. Pacific. Will they be able to run the ball effectively? I think they will, but I think Rosen will put up enough points because I think that this game's going to have a lot of points, but I think that Rosen and this UCLA offense is going to be able to put up a lot of points, and I think it's just going to be tough for Memphis to outscore UCLA in this game. But it's going to be intriguing. The matchups that you see across the board in this game are noteworthy for sure.
Yeah, Rosen's going to have to get going a little earlier than he did in Texas A&M game, especially if they're going to give up points. But I just think that was a momentum builder. As bad as it looked for them, and I don't think they're going to amount to that much this season, I think that'll be enough to get them over this game. And going on the road to Memphis shows how much respect that Memphis has. That kick time you mentioned for UCLA might have a little something to do with it. But the fact that they're going on the road to Memphis and only getting, 2.5 points, that shows a lot of respect for what that Memphis crowd's going to bring at 11 a.m. this morning. And back to that Ole Miss-Cal game, because you mentioned time was an important factor in that game, which it really is. This Ole Miss-Cal game, when just about everything's winding down, this will be a guilty pleasure game because this one starts at 9:30.
A little Pac-12 after dark with a little SEC mixed in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be fantastic. I love that term. Pac-12 after dark has grown on me so much since last season. So that'll be a really good one to look at. Aaron, we got a few minutes before this segment's over, and I just don't want to give away our picks. So
speaking of while we were talking about Pac-12 after dark, guilty pleasure, that Boise State-Washington State game went into three overtimes. And what time did that end? Like 2 in the morning? I didn't stay up and watch it. But it had to have ended at like 2 a.m.
I fell asleep right as it was going to the first overtime. I was already laying down in bed because the game should have been over. I'll tell you about that in just a second. The game should have been over, and I'm laying down, and my stepdad came in there. I went to visit my parents for the weekend to watch the Oklahoma game with my stepdad, and he came in there and said, "You won't believe what happened in this game. Turn it on." I did, and it was getting ready to go to overtime, and I started dozing off. I woke up, and I had on my phone your program has ended, and it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. So I woke up the next day to see how it ended. I thought maybe I fell asleep right before the end. No, it went to triple overtime, and Washington State ended up squeezing it out. But late in this game, Boise State's quarterback, I believe in the first half maybe, got hurt, and he didn't come back.
Yeah, Ripien didn't play in the second game against New Mexico. It's Cozart or something is his name.
Yeah.
Grad transfer from Kansas.
Well, let me tell you something about Cozart here. He messed up. He stole your little, you done messed up, AA, because he messed up pretty bad. It's 31-17. Boise State's winning. 5 minutes to go in the football game, I believe. I believe there's like 5 to 7 minutes to go. And he's scrambling out to the left. He's trying to get away from pressure. And Washington State's got him by the ankles, and they almost have him on his knees. And instead of taking the sack with about 5 minutes to go, he does this little shovel flip to a receiver who's got two guys around him. Washington State picks it for 6 and brings it within a touchdown. Is able to get the ball back and force overtime. Boise State had every chance to win that game, and a big, big time mess up. He could have been the crying Jordan face because it was pretty awful to watch. And Washington State, you can't give a Mike Leach offense time to get back in a game. And I saw a tweet from actually a friend of mine, a guy I know, that he kind of summed that game up beautifully, especially when you put a Mike Leach team in overtime. You feel kind of cheated when you go to 3 overtimes and you kick and field goals. Because but that's what you get when you play Boise State. When Boise State plays a recognizable name, you're not going to get what you expect from that recognizable name. Boise State, even though they lost the game, they always deserve respect, whether it was Chris Peterson coaching or Brian Harsin, because he still has that same mentality that Chris Peterson coached there. So Boise State's always going to be a respectable opponent, but they messed themselves up big time in that game.
Like I've said before, I really wish Boise State would join a Power 5. I would love for them to go to the Big 12. That's where I wish Boise State would go. But
it would be a lot of fun. Now, before this segment's over, there was a surprise stat that I threw at some listeners on Tom's show the other day that I want to see if you can guess before we go. And then we can call it the stat of the week if you want. But, okay, after 2 weeks of football, we're getting ready for week 3. Can you tell me, according to ESPN, I don't know if you've looked at the computer over and over again or not, do you know who has ESPN's total, who is number one for total quarterback rating, college football wide? And I'll give you a hint. Number two is Baker Mayfield. His total quarterback rating is 93.9. There's a guy who's got a 97.5 total quarterback rating after 2 weeks of college football. And he is the quarterback for one of the games we're picking today.
It's not Rosen, is it?
It's not Josh Rosen.
Because he's—I know that he
has not chosen Rosen.
With the exception of a kneel down and a field goal at the end of a half, he's 12 for 12 on his touchdown possessions this year. One of the games we're taking today.
One more guess. I'm going to accuse you of cheating if you guess it right, because there's just no way guessed this right. It's Kyle Shurmur of Vanderbilt.
I was actually about to say Shurmur. I honestly was, and then I was like, there's no way. Like, I just said it in my head. There's no way.
His stats don't pop off the page after 2 weeks. I think he doesn't even have 500 yards passing. But his numbers for Vanderbilt are very impressive for a Vanderbilt team. Vanderbilt doesn't have passing yards the way he's passed the football these past couple weeks, which should give Vanderbilt fans a lot of hope going into this Kansas State matchup. Now, don't get me wrong. If you guys end up losing this game, even if it's badly, don't turn around and say, well, Shurmur was overrated. He sucks. Blah, blah, blah. Kansas State, Bill Snyder's going to coach up a good Kansas State team. Don't worry about that. But, yeah, Kyle Shurmur, your number one quarterback rating, according to ESPN. That's going to do it for hour number one. When we come back, we're going to take a look at some of the SEC games this week. We're going to give you our picks for our big games. But first, we're going to give you a rundown of what's happened these last couple of weeks, who's got the lead, and tell you how you can get in on these picks. That's right here on Tony Mack and the Triplett, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplett with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach! The good talent wants to play for him!
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplett. You know, revelation just hit my mind, because my favorite thing to do on this show, my absolute favorite thing, is to play this clip.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
That's my favorite thing. It hasn't worked out well for me so far this season, but it's my favorite thing to do, and I've just learned that that's a Key and Peele skit, if you guys aren't familiar with it. Key and Peele, when their show was on TV, very hit or miss. But whenever it hit, it was very funny. And their very first skit they ever did is probably one of my favorites. That one right there with the inner city substitute teacher is up there. But there's another one that, the if you're a football fan, you've probably seen it. It's the East and West Bowl, where they go on there and they pretty much are making fun of athletes' names nowadays, and it progressively gets more and more silly. And Aaron, of all people, has never seen that video. We were watching part of it. He hasn't gotten to the real good parts yet. But if you guys haven't seen it, YouTube, Key and Peele East and West Bowl, because it's one of those things, if you're a big sports fan, that you can laugh at and make fun of. But something I really don't want to make fun of, but I guess we can go ahead and look at that. We can go and look at the road so far. Aaron, what's gotten us here? Week one, you beat me. You beat me both weeks. Spoiler alert. Week one, you've taken me down. This is where we're getting in our picks. So if you guys want to get in on this, at Tony Mack UMP, at A-Trip Tennis, at Tony Mack Triplett on Twitter, tweet us in your picks. I'm going to run you down of what's happened so far. Aaron went 4-1 week one. I went 3-2. We both picked Georgia Tech that week. They lost. And I picked West Virginia. You picked Virginia Tech. That was the game you got me on. Last week was a little different. We got a little loose last week. We picked three different. And I knew it could potentially be a bad week. I took some leaps of faith. We both picked Washington State. Squeaked by on that one. And we've squeaked by on a couple so far. I mean, UCLA had to come back from 34 down to give us a win. Washington State had to come down and come from behind late in the fourth quarter and go into triple overtime to win. And then it got hairy for me. I picked Notre Dame. You picked the winning side, Georgia. I picked Stanford. You picked the winning side, USC. We both lost on Auburn. And I redeemed myself by picking Oklahoma, and you picked Oklahoma State. So far, Aaron is 7-3. I am 5-5. So without further ado, flip my page here. trying to do it dramatically by looking Aaron in the
yeah,
eye.
Yeah, he stared me down while he was flipping.
It didn't work.
It was pretty humorous, actually.
All right. Here we go. Well, I forgot to do my thing. Man, I forgot to do my thing. I told you I was going to do my thing. Forgot to do my thing. Whenever somebody got one wrong, I was going to play the buzzer. It's going to play the buzzer. I forgot to play the buzzer. Well, we'll get into that next week. It's okay. Because I still got the best sound effect in the entire world, and I hope we hear it more than once today.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
All right, Aaron, let's just jump into it. We're going to go first. The only reason this game's on the schedule is because I'm curious about the spread. It is Texas going to USC. USC, the last I saw was a 15-point favorite, but it's jumped all the way around to 17.5. Does Texas cover?
It's going to be extremely difficult for Texas to cover, or for Texas to break this spread. They're going to have to play extremely efficiently on offense, because I think that if USC is, if they struggle anywhere so far this season, it's been with defense. They've given up several points, and the spread is still sitting at 15.5 in favor of USC. But I don't know. That's a tough spread, but I just don't see Texas would have to come within two touchdowns. I just don't see them coming within two touchdowns. I think they're going to put up a few points, but I'm thinking more 38-17. Something to that effect. USC's Darnold's going to play well. I think they're going to have a field day with Texas defense. So I think USC's going to take it big in this one.
Don't get me wrong. I can easily see that. And I'm picking USC in this one as well. But if there's one thing, if the one thing Charlie Strong did right at Texas, that was recruit. And Tom Herman, although they you know, came up short against Maryland, putting it mildly, he's got a lot. He's a good coach, and it'll take some time to settle in, but he's got some good talent there. And talent gets up for big games. And I don't know if you didn't think this was a big game already if you're a Texas player, but now that you're 1-1 on the season, you lost to Maryland, this becomes even bigger of a game. I think this is going to give you a bigger chance for your talent to show up and play to your potential. Ultimately, you think you're going to fall up short because there's just too many problems defensively for Texas, because while USC gives up points, so does Texas. I think it's going to be a high-scoring affair. Texas might keep it interesting. I really think they have a really good chance at breaking this spread, but ultimately they will lose this football game. I'm going USC as well. All right, I didn't write these in any particular order, so I got to skip over that one. We're not going to call the game day game just yet. Kentucky going on the road to South Carolina, Aaron. This one is another interesting one because you've got the aspect of Kentucky really not looking great. A lot of people have picked them to contend for the East. Some people have picked them to win the East this year. But they haven't looked great. Steven Johnson's looked okay. It seemed like they've tried to force the football a little too much when they've got a really good running back in Billy Snell. In the backfield, they really started to give it to him more last week, and they pulled away. Going to South Carolina, who's really done a lot of things on special teams. Debo Samuel broken out a couple of weeks in a row. It really looked like NC State outperformed them as far as just traditional offense went. But South Carolina was able to make some plays here and there to win that game. Who do you got? South Carolina is a five-point favorite, I believe, at home. Can Kentucky go in there on the road and pull the upset?
I think they can, but I don't think they do that. I think that South Carolina has played really good football for the first couple weeks, you know, getting a win that a lot of people didn't expect them to get week one over NC State. And then coming back next week and beating Missouri, it was kind of tied early, but they really cracked down and really kind of took it to Missouri late in that game. And that's a really tough way to open. I mean, you open up with on the road or in neutral side action in Charlotte against NC State, and then you play Missouri, a tough opening. South Carolina hadn't had one of those gimme games or what's supposed to be a gimme game yet. So another tough one for them, but I like South Carolina to win this game. I think Bentley's had a great start to the season. I think he continues that. And Kentucky, you're right, has kind of sleptwalked through their first couple games. But I think that South Carolina's going to take this one.
I'm going to agree with you. I think South Carolina takes it as well. As I mentioned before, that they found ways to win. Kentucky's offense is sputtered. I think if they really find what they want to do and start giving it to Benny Snell, I think confidence building is what they've been going with Stephen Johnson, and I'm not sure if it's going to work on the road this week. I think Kentucky's got a pretty good football team, and I think South Carolina's just played a little better all the way around, especially on special teams. If you kick to Debo Samuel, this one's over quickly because he's shown 2 weeks in a row that he's an explosive guy. So if you're South Carolina, get the ball to Debo. Stephen Johnson, hopefully you have enough confidence when you're not giving the ball to Benny Snell. I think it's going to be a good game, but I think South Carolina squeaks this one out. I think it's probably closer than five. I like maybe a 3 or 2 point game here. But yet again, we're agreeing here. South Carolina, onto the not necessarily hard one to pick, but onto the intriguing one. Kansas State going to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt getting 4 points here. What do you think? I mean, can Vandy pull the upset? Can Vandy keep it close, or does Kansas State pull away here?
Vanderbilt will keep this game close. They'll run the football, or they're going to try to establish a run, and Kansas State's going to try to stop the run, but Kansas State's going to look to control the clock. Both teams are going to look to control the clock in this game. It's kind of one of those games when you go to Vanderbilt, it's kind of sleepy, like just a kind of a sleepy game in Nashville. You know, the crowd is not great, but yet it's not quiet. I think it's going to be one of those kind of lull. They're going to try to lull Kansas State to sleep to try to win this game. But I think Kansas State eventually is going to be too much. I think Vanderbilt's going to keep this game close into the third quarter for about a half. Then in the third quarter, Jesse Ertz and company kind of start moving the ball and kind of taking over, kind of imposing their will. I think Vanderbilt's defense is going to get kind of tired. So I like Kansas State winning this game in the fourth, winning this game late in the second half.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Kansas State, I think they're going to be a little tight at first. They're not really used to being in this position. They do play some good non-conference games every year. A couple years ago, they played Auburn, and then back in 2014, I believe, had a chance to win that one. Last year, had a very good chance to beat Christian McCaffrey and Stanford to open the season. But they're not used to being in this role. They were the underdogs in those games. They weren't expected to win those games, and they almost did. Now, they're the favorite, and they pose the same threat, or Vandy poses the same threat that K-State did those 2 years. And I'm curious to see how they're going to deal with this. Jesse Ertz already passing the ball a lot better than he did last year, 70% so far, 511 yards, 4 touchdowns. But he is a big-time rushing threat. He's their second-leading rusher and not off by much. He's got 111 yards already, a touchdown on the ground. You got a big play threat with Byron Pringle in the receiving game. He's only gotten 3 catches, 121 yards. He's averaging 40 yards a catch. So they got some big playmaking ability that I think eventually gets out, but I think Vandy's going to come in and play really hard and really throw these guys off at first. But I'm with you. I think Kansas State pulls away in this game and maybe by double digits, and everybody's saying, wow, good effort, Vanderbilt. You're not as bad as we thought you are. Good job. And I think the Big 12 kind of saves a little face here by pulling away and winning this one, because the Big 12's taken some hits this season, but they've also saved some with some good wins. And obviously, Oklahoma last week going in into Ohio State winning that one, and TCU beating Arkansas was another good one. So if Kansas State, not necessarily a great win for the Big 12, you don't look at this and say, yeah, well, Kansas State beat Vanderbilt. But that adds on to it. Kansas State also beat A&M in a bowl game last year, another SEC team. You're not losing, and then that helps the perception of the Big 12. I'm going with Kansas State as well. Let's move on to LSU going on the road to Mississippi State. This one's interesting. This one's really interesting because you pose the fact that Mississippi State's 7.5-point dog at home, haven't beaten LSU at home since 1999, I think, and I believe it was a 1-point game. So while they've beaten LSU here the last few years with Dak Prescott, they haven't done it at home. LSU poses a big threat in this series, no matter where they are, obviously. But the thing that keeps me interested in this one is you've got a severe dual threat on Mississippi State side that'll keep this interesting. Nick Fitzgerald keeping the ball in his hands. I'm curious, how close can he keep this game? Aaron, do you think LSU gets upset on the road? If not, how close is it? Who you got?
I don't think that LSU is going to get upset on the road in this game, but I do think that I think it's going to be close, closer than a lot of people think. I think Nick Fitzgerald, who's having a better start to this season than he did last season, I think he's better than he was last season, which I didn't expect this year, but he started the season better. And I think he's gonna have to put up some numbers. I think they're gonna try to use him, use his athleticism to run the ball, control the clock, keep it away from LSU. Darius Geis is gonna have a huge game. I think that's where Mississippi State's gonna struggle, is stopping the run. But I think down the stretch, Mississippi State's gonna lock down, and they're gonna make Danny Etling make a couple throws. And I think he does down the field vertically to the athletic wide receivers that LSU has. But I think it very well could be closer than 7 points. I'm not going to take Mississippi State in the upset, because I think LSU just has too many weapons, too many athletes on defense. I think they're going to get the stops they need. But I think it is going to be close. But I think they run the football effectively and have to pull away at the very, very end. But Fitzgerald plays a great game. Just, he's not quite good enough, but he keeps them in it all the way to the final minute. But I'm going to take LSU.
That's interesting. You mentioned – I'm going with LSU too, I'll obviously, but – you mentioned something, and that was Danny Etling making throws at the end of the game when he needs to the most. I think if they're put in that situation, I think that's where it could turn Mississippi State's way. I mean, unless Mississippi State isn't getting any pressure at all, I think Etling will probably be able to find people, but I don't think that'll be the case. Mississippi State doesn't have a very imposing defense, but they're at home. I think they will dial up some pressure on Etling. I think Geis is going to have to carry this. I think Etling will have some success early, but if they start shutting down Geis somehow and Etling's forced to throw late in this football game, I think that's how Mississippi State does win this football game. But I just don't think that's going to happen. I think Geis maybe not going to have 200 yards on the ground, but he's going to be effective enough, and he's going to be the difference maker. And I think that's what decides this game. But I think Nick Fitzgerald is going to keep this thing close. I think he's the better quarterback than Etling. Both of them have some throwing issues, but I think we've reached our ceiling with Danny Etling. That this is the Danny Etling we saw last year. He's not going to get that much better than that, if he does get better than that at all. Nick Fitzgerald's got a lot of ways to grow, and we've seen that. And in the his ceiling is based on his legs. He can escape a lot more. He buys himself a lot more time, which opens up a lot more throws. Can make those throws maybe like a Baker Mayfield. He's a lot more of a threat running the football. He ran for 1,300 yards last year.
I think that if we're going to see really anything that's going to be different from LSU's offense, from the new offensive coordinator, Matt Canada, and how they're going to use guys, how they're going to use Danny Etling and throwing the ball vertically down the field, or however they're going to mix things up and, you know, make this LSU offense more potent, different than we've seen from the Cam Cameron offense of recent years, I think we're going to have to see it in this game. Because, you know, they had their opening week against BYU, and they played in their own backyard at New Orleans, where they blew out BYU, but the guys carried the ball, 33 times?
Yeah.
For well over, for like 157 yards. And who did they play? Didn't they play
Chattanooga last
week? Cream puff last week. So if we're gonna see something different out of LSU's offense, and with the new offensive coordinator, new scheme, new things to mix it up, but still keep guys as the main vocal point of this offense. But we got to see what LSU fans, and what I guess fans in general, are wanting to see from LSU is something different than this Cam Cameron offense that we've been used to seeing. So I think if they're going to win this game and have real success moving down the stretch, we're going to see that change in this game.
I agree that that's exactly what LSU has to do moving forward. If they want to be a real SEC contender and a contender against Alabama, they have to prove that there's a threat other than Darius Geis, because that's what's gotten them killed in the Alabama game the last few years with Leonard Fournette. That's their strength going into the game, and if your biggest strength going into the game, and it's not even close, is how dominant your run game is, then you're screwed when you play Alabama, because that's Alabama's biggest strength, is stopping the run in a hurry. So I agree with you. If they want to have a chance to win big games in the SEC over and over again, they're going to have to open up and show that they can, other than a couple times a game, hit a big threat down the field. I don't necessarily think that's the case in this one. I think Geis is going to be enough, and I think that's a good thing for LSU, because if they do start trying to open up and it's not working, they're going to be in trouble. Right now in the season, this is a game you really need to try to figure out who's your guy to go to downfield, because other than DJ Chark, who do you have? And DJ Chark was relatively unproven this year, coming into this year. He was a good talent last year, but he was still behind a few other guys for LSU. So who do you go to? I'm with you. I totally understand what you're saying, but I just don't have that faith in him.
And you brought up a good point. You know, what's been getting them killed against Alabama is it's that inability to really, you know, have any kind of other threat outside of running the ball. And you see, 2 years ago they had a top four matchup, as they always seem to have. Because LSU will have a great season up to the point where they play Alabama, and then they'll get beat. And it's because they have really no offense outside of what was Leonard Fournette these past couple years. You know, last year they got shut out where their defense, that defense in the Alabama game last year was, it was, they looked like the best defense in college football. LSU's did, the two best defenses anyway in that game, because they only gave up 10 points, but they lost 10-0. And of course they hadn't beat Alabama since 2011. And that was, of course, they hadn't really changed anything in their offense, but they had a, that was the two best teams in the country going at it in the regular season, two of the best defenses. But now your defense can step up and they can play against Alabama, but the defense is, or the difference is, you've got to have some variety on offense, and it's proven against Nick Saban that you have to, the formula that works is you got to have a quarterback that's a threat with his legs, and you got to be able to spread the ball out to receivers. You have to have an, you have to have a competent quarterback that can spread the ball around to receivers, and that is a really a threat to beat you with his feet to make the defense respect it, because you saw it with, I mean, Watson 2 years ago ran for several, for a lot of yards against Alabama. Last year, they, Alabama completely shut down Clemson's running game, because that was one of the best defenses that we've ever seen, but Watson was still able to pick them apart. And then Nick Marshall did so in 2014. Auburn, of course, gave up 50-something points, but they had about 600-something yards of offense on an Alabama defense when they spread it out, went vertically down the field, had a guy who can beat you with his legs. You don't line up against Alabama and run I formation and beat them between the tackles. You don't. It, the formula is you spread them out, you throw the ball vertically downfield, you push those second, you push the guys deep into the secondary, get the linebackers cheating up, you go deep over the top, and then that opens up your run pass options to beat them that way. And if LSU doesn't adapt and show us something like that, to try, they're not going to beat Alabama. They're not going to have a chance.
And they're not just not going to beat Alabama. They really show that they could start falling off like some of these other SEC teams have.
Yeah, very loose several other games.
Absolutely, and they could start, you know, dwindling down to the towards the middle, maybe bottom of the SEC, and it's not looking good.
But the way Auburn has played defensively, you're not going to beat Auburn defensively. I mean, Auburn's got, in my opinion, Auburn's got a top five defense in the country.
Agreed. Oh my goodness.
Now you're gonna sack Stidham as many times as you want to. Auburn and LSU might be that game that goes 7-7 into overtime, or maybe even 6-6. But Auburn's got a top five caliber defense, and you're not going to. I mean, as good as Geis is, Danny Etling's going to have to beat Auburn.
Yeah. That's a good point. And you were mentioning ways to beat Alabama, and it's really to spread the field out. You're not saying that the run can't be successful against Alabama. It's just not going to be what opens up your game plan. You have to do other things to open up the run. Look at some of the teams that have beaten Alabama in the past. I'm not necessarily talking about Ole Miss, because some of those were fluky. But you got Clemson. The run with the quarterback was there. But then you go back to the Oklahoma game in the Sugar Bowl. They didn't run. I don't think they ran for 100 yards. They may have ran for 80 or so. But they had big runs in that game. You know, 5, 7 yards here, 10 here. That extended and was able to run the clock, but it was opened up by a good game plan. Now Oklahoma didn't have a great mobile quarterback like Deshaun Watson, but they had Trevor Knight and a great game plan working the sidelines, getting the ball out quickly, stretching that defense out, and really throwing downfield, having some really good throws downfield, confusing that defense, showing them you can do more than just run the football. And that's exactly what you're talking about. Show them you can do more things instead of coming out right away and saying, hey, this is what we want to do. Ultimately, yes, that's what you want to do, period, is you want to be able to run the football. But you got to show Alabama, a team like Alabama, you can do a lot more than just try to run the football. Because
especially if you run that spread style, that option, and if you can at least rip off some chunks, you know, 4, 5, 6 yards, 8 yards, 11 yards, then 3, back and forth, and then you break off that big one like Nick Marshall did in 2013, a big run for a touchdown. Alabama is so used to stopping the run. If you can show that you are able to run the ball against them, they get surprised, and then you have an advantage. Then you hit them with a big play over the top off play action. It's much, much easier said than done. We're sitting here talking about, oh, this is how you beat Alabama. Much easier said than done.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the formula that we've seen work in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. And as of right now in the SEC, I just don't see any team that has that opportunity. But enough for Alabama talk. They really have a big matchup this week. We could talk about them beating the drum that is Colorado State this weekend. But let's get back into our matchups.
Fresno State did get into the end zone last week. They got that early field goal, then got in the end zone, put up 10 points last week.
They sure did. We've been able to – we've seen so much Alabama football these last 10 years that it's so easy to kind of predict what's going to happen.
They're very predictable. The predictable is we're going to cover the spread against anybody that's not an SEC team. We're going to cover the spread against every SEC team that's either not – Of course, last year I think they were unbeaten against the spread with the exception of Ole Miss, and they should have covered the spread in that game. And then, of course, the national championship game. But it's just they're very predictable. But it's one of those things, until you can stop it, we're going to keep doing it. And it's just easy to figure out what they're going to do defensively, offensively. And like you said, we've seen so much of it over the last 10 years.
It's gotten to the point where Nick Saban can hand me play-by-play what they're going to run, and they're still probably going to beat you.
Pretty sure that he could do that to most of the teams that he played. Like, here, we're going to play this style of defense, and we're going to run these plays on offense in consecutive order, and we're still going to cover the spread against you.
Yeah. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to pick our last couple games here on our list, and you guys can get in as well. This is the Tony Mack and the Triplet Show, Sports Radio 730, 1039, The Ump. Triplet. 30 minutes now. Just 30 minutes until kickoff. Perfect time to give you guys the rest of our picks. Aaron, we're going to jump back into it here. We left off. We both picked USC, K-State, LSU, South Carolina. It's been boring so far. We haven't picked against each other, so let's change that up real quick. The more confusing game is not the game day game, so we're going to go ahead and save that one for last. Clemson at Louisville. Louisville getting some respect, only a 3-point underdog going into Clemson. Who you got? Louisville pull off the upset? Do they finally finish off what they started last year and beat Clemson?
Well, Louisville's going to have their hands full. I mean, they're at home, but they're going to have their hands full with what I think is the best front four in the country in Clemson. And, you know, Clemson's got – this is a championship-caliber defense. They lost several guys, but they brought back a core on defense that won the national championship last year. And Christian Wilkins is on that defensive front. I think he's going to be one of the top picks in the draft. He's an absolute animal. And that front four, like I said, I think is the best in football. They've got more sacks since the start of 2016 than any other team in the country. Granted, they did get 11 last week against Auburn, but they're a very talented front, and Louisville does not have the strongest offensive line. Lamar Jackson is going to take some sacks, and if he's going to do so much with his feet tonight, a lot on his own to try to make some plays. But I think Louisville's front offensive line is just not ready for this Clemson front four, and Kelly Bryant, first big road start, going to be a real test. I think he's going to have some jitters early, but I think he calms down because he looked very poised against Auburn after having a slow start. But he came through on a couple of drives against Auburn and produced two touchdown drives. And he was very poised and then made some throws that you just can't do anything about. Like, there was a couple over the shoulder throws where you could, and the announcer said, you couldn't hand it to him better than that. And he did. It was some very impressive throws. I think he's going to make some tonight. I think Louisville hangs around for most of the game, but I think that Clemson breaks it open in the end. I just think that the pressure, the front four, the defense is just too much from Clemson. I think Clemson takes this one.
It's going to be interesting to see, as you mentioned, Kelly Bryant. Not his first big game, but his first big road game. I'm curious to see how he handles the crowd more so than I am this Louisville defense, because he just went up against, you know, a top five defense in the country. Granted, it's always going to be you're always going to know you're going to have your opportunities when you go off the field. You've got a defense like that coming in for you as well. And I just think that he was more tested last week against Auburn's front seven, really. So it's the crowd that he's going to have to battle. I think he might have a slow start. Louisville's defense might play a little more up to their, a little more past their potential than normal. I think Clemson's going to live in the backfield on the other side of the ball. I think they're going to dominate the Louisville's offensive line, which really isn't hard. Started to fall apart last year. Really hasn't shown signs of improvement this year. I think we'll see one star, maybe the running back for Louisville, maybe not. Another guy kind of start to show potential and have a breakout game, and then it's just going to be the Lamar Jackson show. I think you're right. I think Lamar keeps them in this game like he did last year. They were a first down away from winning this football game, and the receiver just didn't know where he was. He caught it, and he didn't know where he was, stepped out of bounds a yard short of the first down, turned the ball over on downs. Other than that, that was his receiver getting in Lamar Jackson's way. Clemson really couldn't do anything about that. We'll see how they respond this year in this game, because Clemson's really starting to become that team, it looks like, that you know, the national championship was an anomaly. They reload, and they're starting with this defense. Kelly Bryant was impressive last week against Auburn. He certainly has room to grow, but if he's your quarterback going forward in big tight games, then you should feel confident because he didn't make big mistakes, and we'll see if he continues that. But again, I'm going Clemson here as well. I think Clemson's going to pull away. I don't think it's going to be as tight as it was last year. I don't think we're going to see as much late drama as last year. I hope we don't get Louisville Florida State from last year, that 11 o'clock blowout. But I hope we get a little bit better of a game because of the kind of the weak schedule as far as ranked matchups go. But I think Clemson wins this one easy. They feel good about this one. It's more of a dominant performance by them. Now, let's go on to the toughest one here because we've picked all the same games. You said you've already made your pick. I just made my pick. And let me tell you something. My confidence level picking this is absolutely zero. But, Aaron, Tennessee going to the Swamp, getting 4.5 points, which is absurd. Who you got? Tell me why. Try to change my mind.
Well, this game, like I said, I've said earlier this week, it's going to be ugly. This game is going to be ugly. The defenses, at least Florida's, I mean, they've got a pretty solid defense. They still got a lot of guys suspended, but this game is not going to be about the great defense. It's going to be about the ugly offense. Both teams, yeah, Tennessee put up points, yeah, but they put up points on a Georgia Tech team that gives up points. And they're pretty banged up. Florida's got some guys suspended. This game's going to be 2:30 CBS. The atmosphere is going to be great in the Swamp. It's going to be an entertaining game. To the point just of the fact that it's close, the intrigue. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be some turnovers. There will be a defensive score by Florida in this game because they just seem to do that every single game. But will they score on offense? Didn't score an offensive touchdown against Michigan, which I called, by the way. I also called a defensive touchdown by Michigan, which I called, and I got both of those. And, of course, Florida hadn't played since the Michigan game. They got the Northern Colorado game, was canceled. So they were like, well, they've had an extra week to prepare. But you also wanted to get that gimme game to work some kinks out. And Tennessee coming off that huge huge overtime game against Georgia Tech. And they played a gimme game last week as well.
Indiana State.
And I think that was 42-7 or something like that. It's going to be an interesting game. I think this is going to be more defensive than you think. I think if points are going to be put up, it's going to be in the second half. I read an interesting article. It was kind of it was talking about Jim McElwain, talking about how even if he loses this game, he's going to go no worse than 4-4 in the division. But if he doesn't beat Florida State this year, when Florida State has more quarterback questions than he does, he's out. And I called at the beginning that Jim McElwain is going to be out after 3 years. I would love to see that happen because I didn't think it was going to happen because he's won the division twice. But the division is weak.
So does that start here? Are you picking Tennessee?
Not yet. But I will say this: to win this game, Jim McElwain has to commit to a quarterback. If he's gonna, because they were comparing him to Dan Mullen and how McElwain has gotten 10 times better recruits than Mullen, but Mullen turned 3-star Dak Prescott and 3-star Nick Fitzgerald into players, and Jim McElwain's getting 5-star guys like he botched the Will Grier situation. Franks was a huge recruit. He's got to develop some quarterbacks. Dan Mullen's over there developing 3 stars into the second best, one of the top quarterbacks in the SEC. And you're back here, you can't produce an offensive touchdown with 5-star guys. So something's got to give. McElwain's got to commit to a guy. If he commits to Franks long term, they've got a chance this season. But Florida at home, they are 4.5 point favorites. I'm probably going to take Tennessee on the spread. But I'm taking Florida to win this game at home in the Swamp. They're going to score on defense. I think they're going to force about 3 turnovers in this game. One's going to be for a touchdown. One's going to be inside Tennessee's own 20 in the red zone that's going to produce some points. And Tennessee, of course, they're going to move the ball, but Florida's got a good defense. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be by less than a possession. It's going to be won late in the game. But I got the Gators at home with defense again in this game.
Last year, I picked Florida to win this game. I said Tennessee wasn't going to be able to move the ball. Florida was going to dominate this football game. In the first half, I was absolutely correct. You mentioned that Tennessee was going to win last year. In the second half, you were correct.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
You're not fooling me this time. You're not fooling me this time. I finally get to use it. I'm going to use it again.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
Because Tennessee's going to win this football game, and I'm going to tell you why, and I'm going to tell you why I have no confidence in either team whatsoever. I don't feel confident in this game. I'm going to sound angry, so I sound like I have confidence in this game. But I've got Tennessee mainly because it's weakness against weakness, first of all. Tennessee's got a weak defense that lines a yard off the scrimmage. And Florida's got an offense that can't move the football. They've scored 3 points on offense in one game. And granted, it was a good Michigan team, but it's a Michigan team who was returning one starter on defense. Yeah, I get that they're talented, but you can't confuse them a little bit. You can't make them second-guess themselves at all. Tennessee is injury-prone. Don't get me wrong. They have a safety that's probably down for the season now. Florida's still got 9 players suspended. 9 players suspended into this game, including Antonio Callaway, who was a big factor in the first half of this game last year. Big guy on special teams, big-time receiver.
Their only source of offense, arguably.
Absolutely. And then their leading rusher from a year ago, Jordan Scarlett, again, will not make an appearance in this game. He is still suspended, plus 7 others. To add on to the fact, sure, the crowd's going to be rowdy, don't get me wrong, because it's their home opener. A lot of some people mention, and a lot of people debunk it, like I will. Well, you get 2 weeks to prepare for this team now. Your Colorado State game or whatever game it was, Northern Colorado, gets canceled. You get a chance now to study Tennessee for 2 weeks. That's not a typical bye week. Not only was it canceled because of a natural disaster, but think about that. You've got families that were affected by this. It's a gigantic distraction. It throws off your rhythm, if you had any at all, after that embarrassing Michigan contest. I think you're right, though, about settling the quarterback dispute. I think Florida does that. I think you see Felipe Franks for probably the entirety of the contest, unless he just has an awful game. Either way, I think you're going to see one quarterback for a long, long stretch of time, unless he takes himself out of the game because of big mistakes. I think that quarterback is going to be Felipe Franks that goes through this game. Dormady, not great, but he's okay. You've got John Kelly, your leading rusher, who's very good. And Michigan showed that you can have success running the football against Florida. It's throwing the football that you're going to have trouble with eventually. I think Dormady's probably got a higher ceiling than Spate does, and I think he'll probably open up this secondary a little bit. And I think Tennessee wins this football game. Aaron, honestly, I couldn't predict a score for you because I really don't even feel like Tennessee – I don't feel that confident in Tennessee winning this football game. So I can't tell you what the score is going to be. If you told me Tennessee won 3-0, I'd believe you. If you told me Florida won 3-0, I would believe you. If it was 45-49, I could believe it, I guess, because of how soft Tennessee is. I just don't know. But I'm going to go Tennessee in this one. I've been back and forth. I felt confident in Florida. I felt confident in Tennessee. Then I didn't feel confident in either team, and I was going to pick Florida. Now I don't feel confident in either team. I'm picking Tennessee. It's another Michigan, Florida thing again, where Michigan was young. And you really wanted to pick Florida in that game. You really, really wanted to pick Florida in that game, but they just kept another suspension after another. Now Antonio Callaway's gone. Now your leading rusher's gone. You've got no depth. You had no choice but to pick Michigan. And I think you've got that same thing here where, yet again, you have no source of offense. You've proven that a couple weeks ago. Natural disaster is really starting to affect the mentality of this team. And then, on top of that, again, 9 players gone. Your best guys are out again. So it's one of those games where you really don't know who to pick, but it's not a good thing because it's not really going to be a good one. I'm with you. I think it's going to be cocktail party ugly, where that game could get really ugly and out of hand at times. I think that's what it's going to be. I think Tennessee's on the winning side of this one. Butch survives the month of September, but I think McElwain's on his way to being out the door. I'm going Tennessee, the only game either one of us picked against each other on. So, Aaron, again, I will tell you,
you done messed up, A.A. Ron!
How do you feel about that?
I'm a little nervous because I have no confidence in my pick either. But
I sounded confident, though, didn't I?
Yeah, as long as you sound confident, then, well, I mean, what else matters? But it's gonna be a fun game. It's going to be a fun afternoon, at least in that game. And that 2:30 kick, it's going to be about, you know, about 5:15, and it's going to be coming down to the last possession. Somebody's got the ball, and it's going to be a fun game, I think, but it's going to be ugly, that's for sure.
You know, it's games like this. I believe last year you took a sizable lead on me in college picks. It's games like this, 1 week at a time, you just kind of chip away at that lead. So are you nervous on that aspect? You nervous I'm going to get you?
No, because it's a long season.
I'm coming for you, Aaron.
It's a long season. And, of course, I remember, of course, 2 years ago when we started this, you took a 4 or 5 game lead on me 1 week, and then the very next week I won all 4 games or something that we picked differently. So, and then same thing last year, except it was vice versa. And, you know, I won the first year, and then you won last year. So
it came down to the last week, too.
Came down to the last week. I think almost both years it did. But it's – I'll probably be sweating during that game because, I mean, it's the difference because I'm up 2 games on you. It's the difference between going up 3 or only being up 1 going into next week.
Florida's first down of the game, I'm going to tell you it's over. 4-1.
We are at least I know I am. My brother's the same way. We are that kind of fan that when something happens like that in the game, that's the game. Like, we're just watching it. Yeah. Oh, he ran 10 yards first down. Oh, this game's over. This game's over.
Very pessimistic view. I'm pessimistic in this game because I just have no confidence.
Might as well turn it off now. Just turn it off now. No sense in watching.
See, I'm one of those fans. I'm not ashamed either. I'm extremely superstitious when it comes to Oklahoma football. I have to wear a road jersey every time they go on the road. I wear a home jersey every time they go on the road. That's not a guaranteed win. That's just kind of to start the good karma. But if things are starting to go like Ohio State's way, and I was sitting in this chair, if they score, I move. I stand up. If things go Oklahoma's way, I will make sure I'm standing up again. Or I had a full glass of water. I just drank. I really do get that superstitious in big games for Oklahoma football.
Well, with me, I've got a few things with Auburn. Is because, I mean, I'm in my house. We had I had 2 dogs in my house, you know, the last few years I was in high school, and rest his soul, we had to put one of my dogs, we named him Aubie, of course, to sleep a couple years ago. He was 15 years old, a yellow lab, but him and my other dog, a little Shizu, Aubie wear an Auburn bandana, and Darby would wear a jersey, a little Auburn jersey. And we wouldn't wear them. We'd pull them out for the big games, but not even all the big games, just several. And there was a period of time there where they were like 8-1 with the little jerseys on. And so we saved those for typically opening week and sometimes LSU and Alabama. But then we don't break them out all the time. But then there's that. And then I also have different places that I sit. When I'm at my parents' house, I sit different places for different games. Like we have one, this love seat kind of facing. You see the TV is in front of all, I mean, it's sitting, you know, perpendicular to the television, and I sit there for the Alabama game. But yet, on the big 3-person couch that has like the little footstools that pop out, I sit on the far left side of that when they play LSU. So that's just kind of like one of those things, like that's where I sit when they play those two teams.
Yeah, football, like especially with diehard fans, it can be very superstitious. It's very weird on the outside. It's something that until now, and I'm sure you'd haven't told that to too many people, never really said. I don't say that out loud. Like whenever Ohio State scores, I don't look at my parents or if I'm visiting them or my fiance and be like, oh, time to stand up now. They scored. It's just something going on in my head. And I really don't tell anybody because I don't want to come off crazy, but I know. I know how cuckoo that sounds. But we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we talked about the Heisman to open up the show. I want to talk about it again, but I want to talk about a different side of it. I saw yesterday or the other day on ESPN them talking about who has a better chance to win the Heisman, Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson. Let's talk about that, but in a different light, and I'll tell you what that means after the break. This is Tony Mack and the Triplets, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Tony Mack in the Triplet, final segment before we throw you into 11 a.m., which is kickoff time here. We mentioned the Heisman earlier today. We brought that up, and I wanted to bring up a different light because ESPN was talking the other day, who has a better chance to win the Heisman, Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson? Number one, there's always a dark horse candidate that comes out of nowhere because he didn't have the pressure on him all season. So it's unfair for ESPN to do that, obviously, put the pressure on these guys. Lamar Jackson has enough pressure. He's got a good quarterback chasing him down in Baker Mayfield. And he also has to go against himself from last year. It's unfair to do that to a guy like Baker Mayfield because you're putting the spotlight on them where you're magnifying a game if they have an off game. But other guys are able to get away with bad games because the spotlight's not on them until the end of the year. But the part I wanted to talk about, Aaron, is how unfair is it really to start talking about that now? And I've got an interesting point to bring up, but it's not fair. It's too soon, obviously, to bring up Heisman talk now, right?
Yeah, but of course, every year after, even before the season starts, they have like preseason Heisman odds, and then after the first week, you know, there's people who want to give the Heisman and crown the Heisman Trophy winner now after week one.
Which I've seen two September Heismans ultimately win the Heisman. That was Lamar Jackson last year and RG3.
Yeah, I don't really. I think that sounds pretty. Correct.
After 3 weeks, I think his first season, his Heisman year, RG3 had thrown more touchdown passes than he had in completions.
Yeah, I know that Geno Smith had done that a few weeks into the season, but I think you're probably right about that as well. But I've seen there's a couple of guys who got the Heisman Trophy after the first couple weeks, and then ended up not doing anything. One of them was Geno Smith,
yeah.
And the other was Kenny Hill. Yeah. I remember everybody wanted to give Kenny Hill the Heisman after 1 week against South Carolina.
But here's the point I wanted to make about talking about this too soon, and even trying to just pick between Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson. Look at their stats. Lamar's stats are a little better. Baker Mayfield has a better road opponent. It's not fair to compare those two, because honestly, Homer set aside, you would have to give it to Baker Mayfield, right? I mean, he went on the road to Ohio State, was 11 of 18 in the first half, went 16 of 17 in the second half, dominated. But it's not fair, because Baker Mayfield got to have his road statement game. You're posing that question before Louisville plays Clemson. It's not a road game, but they host another. You mentioned Auburn, one of the best defensive teams in the country. Clemson, Ohio State's up there too. And Oklahoma went in there and dominated that defense. Louisville has that chance. Lamar Jackson has that chance today. But you want to ask who has a better chance of winning the Heisman before you get to look at him go up against a good team? That's unfair to both sides. Because one, right now Baker Mayfield looks better. He's already proven himself against a top-ranked team. But it's unfair to say that for Baker Mayfield, because to even put Lamar in that category with Baker Mayfield, if that's the way you're going to go, because Lamar Jackson could lay a goose egg against Clemson, and it wouldn't be fair. I don't think he's going to. It's just dumb to bring up questions that early. And you're not giving Lamar Jackson a fair shake, because he gets his chance against a top-tier opponent this weekend, tonight.
Yeah, I think it just should be something that's kind of left towards the end of the season. But, you know, it's always going to be the same reason we have preseason football rankings. It stirs up conversation. It stirs up listeners and viewers and all this other stuff. So it's always fun. It's always interesting to talk about. Of course, I think the Heisman Trophy is becoming almost, with the exception of Derrick Henry and really Mark Ingram, the two Alabama backs, the Heisman has almost become an exclusive quarterback award. Of course, it's only typically been a quarterback or a running back. We've had a couple receivers, and then you had Charles Woodson, who was kind of a hybrid player, played mostly defense, played some offense as a receiver, and then, of course, was a primary special teams guy. But other than him, Tim Brown won it as a receiver. It's just difficult to win it if you're not a quarterback or running back. Now it's becoming incredibly difficult if you're a running back even.
Yeah, I don't remember much of Tim Brown, but I remember when Desmond Howard won it.
Desmond is another one, but once again, you get special teams. You have
exactly
to be involved on the special teams.
That's what I was going to mention. You don't just win it by being a receiver. He was heavily involved. His Heisman moment was on a special teams punt return against. Was it Ohio State that he returned it against?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was Ohio State.
Threw up the Heisman stance. So I'm with you. It's strictly becoming a quarterback award. But if Lamar Jackson, let's just be fair right now. If Lamar Jackson goes out there and puts on a show and they don't win this game, shut up. He's still in the Heisman race.
Yeah, he had a great game against Louisville last year, or against Clemson last year, that shouldn't have hurt his stance any, or even really Louisville's chances at the championship or the playoff at that point.
You're exactly right. All right, that's going to do it for today. It is almost 5 minutes till kickoff. This has been For Aaron, the Tony Mack and the Triplett Show. I'm Tony Mack. We'll see you guys next week, going till 11:30 next week, right here on Sports Radio 730 103.9 The O.